Hello, my name is Junie, and welcome to the Theta Game Podcast. I'm not a financial advisor, and nothing I say is financial advice. I'm just a normal retail trader, just like you. I'm not certified or a graduate of finance, just a trader that started on Wall Street Bets years ago. I've lost a lot of money and made all of it back and more after finding a system that worked for me. You can view all my trades for free at thetagang.com/Junie, no signup required, and email me any questions that I'll answer on the podcast at junie@thetagang.com. Lastly, I stream on Twitch every weekday at least an hour at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Come hang out, ask me questions, vent, or just chill. It's a positive environment, and everyone is welcome at twitch.tv/realthetagang. I've been using the TastyTrade trading platform since I started my ThetaGang journey 5 years ago, and it feels surreal that I've partnered with TastyTrade so I can focus on bringing you guys and girls the content. If you'd like to sign up and use TastyTrade for your trading journey, you can use my link in the show description or use the ThetaGang referral code, that's one word, all caps, when signing up. I use TastyTrade every Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, where I chat and trade with viewers live every morning. Go again to twitch.tv/realthetagang if you're interested, join the chatter and morning hangout. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. Hey y'all, how's it going? Today I want to talk about four sort of trading habits that bad traders do, according to Tom Hoogard and his book, Best Loser Wins. I'm on page 130 where he outlines these bad habits. And, you know, it's honestly really hard to tell whether or not you are a good trader or a bad trader. There are habits that lead us to have maybe bad habits that maybe lead us to have negative profit losses. But in reality, what really, I think at the very end of the day, you can't call someone that has a negative P&L a good trader yet. You know, maybe we zoom out, maybe they've had a great history before and this could be a bad year. But maybe they just weren't a good trader this year and they could have been better. Right? This is not a competition. I don't gain anything by calling anyone necessarily bad or calling out someone that has a bad year or bad quarter. It is just definitive, right? This book talks a lot about how 90% of people lose in the stock market as due to some of these bad habits that I'll be outlining for you today. If you find that you're doing some of these bad habits, there could be some room in your trading strategy to stop doing these. Or maybe start doing some things, as we'll talk about some more of the proactive options. But at the end of the day, if you are red this year, just as a reminder, there is a lot of room in your strategy to change. I think with the gross amount of profit that we've had this year, that there had to have been some sort of directional bias that someone had to have had to lose those profits. Position sizing is huge, you know. Market's hot, market's running super hot, and you want to get more and more premium out of it, or you want to buy more calls, you know, any of this stuff, all of it can vanish, and it sucks if you don't practice your fundamentals. Fundamentals can mean a lot of different things. I think the number one fundamental rule that I think a lot of people are breaking right now is investing money that they can't afford to lose. I think putting in too much of any one type of trade in any direction is really, really dangerous. It really messes with your mindset when the stock position starts to go red. You might start justifying on holding it longer if it goes red. Then it messes with your mind in case if it starts going green, you want to catch the bounce. It gets really, really dicey when you start playing around with money that you know, you thought you couldn't afford to lose when you first put it in, but then it starts not doing so hot, you put in too much, and then now you're in this like sunk cost fallacy where, hey, you know, it has to turn around eventually. I'm just going to sell more puts here. Everything will be fine. The reasoning there is okay. If we see that the market is strong, we want to sell puts. That makes sense. We want to collect money on the way up. Tom Hoogard talks about adding on to strength, and I agree with that too. I'm practicing this a lot as well. However, I think when we apply rules from this book, the book that I'm talking about today, into theta game related strategies, it has to be taken in a different perspective. It can't just be a one-to-one transfer of knowledge, because one of the stark differences of Tom Hoogard's trading style and the theta game trading style is that Tom trades with like long calls and long puts. And long puts and long calls and maybe shorting stock and buying stock, these all have infinite, you know, near infinite amount of profit that you can make. And the maximum loss is defined. It's very small, you know, in relation to being infinite profit. The opposite is true for theta gain related strategies. In theta gain related strategies, you're risking a lot more money because you're going to signing up for 100 shares at a time. Because when you get assigned on cash secure puts, you're putting a lot of money at risk, but the chances of you winning is greater. To Tom Hoogard, the chances of winning, it really doesn't matter to him because he emphasizes on trying to be the best loser. So when you lose, you want your losses to be small, and when you win, you want your gains to be big. That is very hard to do with cash secured puts, especially in a red market, because you're risking a lot of money to catch a bounce. If we're say in an uptrend and we're selling puts, that's great. A lot of strategies actually work in an uptrend. But if we add too many cash secured puts and the market's too hot and it eventually starts cooling off like it usually does, then we're left at in a very skewed maximum profit, maximum loss ratio if we do only cash secured puts. And that's not to say like you should never write cash secured puts in a red or green market. Everything is possible. Any strategy I think can actually work in the stock market. Right, you just have to be lucky. You need to have like a little bit of luck, but you need to focus on, again, the fundamentals. And that right now, I think, is position sizing. Position sizing for a lot of people have gotten really out of whack. I think those are some of the biggest losses that I've seen on Wall Street Bets and some of traders that are pretty close to me. So, you know, we are in a situation where we want to make money, and I think a lot of us are influenced by this book. I know I am, and I think adding on to strength is still a very, very good thing. The market doesn't look great right now. We've got some of a bounce today on today, Friday. Today's July 26th, and maybe we continue seeing some of that green into next week. Next week is FOMC and a lot of earnings reports, but here's the thing. We can wait until there's more confirmation of a trend back up. There's no real reason to sort of sign up to allocate thousands, tens of thousands of dollars to stocks right now. I don't see the motif. I don't see where it's beneficial for me, where if I'm hoping for a bounce, calls are cheaper. Especially call debit spreads. You take the volatility out with the further out the money call. And I'm seeing the market totally different now as I'm seeing risk reward. I'm still very much learning on the long call and long put side. And it's just helped a lot focusing on long options, as if I would have continued to maybe buy the dip the way that I usually do with buy rights or cash secured puts, I would be down thousands of dollars, maybe up to like $10,000 had I continued on with my normal plan. But I've learned that I don't like writing cash secured puts as the market is going down. I don't like writing cash secured puts on downtrends. And so I've been focusing on, say, like buying long calls, because if I'm looking for a bounce, I might as well keep my max profits at near infinite. That seems cool. You know, that's dream scenario, infinite amount of money. Who doesn't want that? But my max loss is really small, at least compared to a cash secured put. So as we've been playing around with this downtrend, I've been really focusing on long options. And in the time of this downtrend, had I opened like just one cash secured put, which is really small for me, if I do just do one cash secured put on AMD, I'd probably be down maybe like $4,000 right now had I like written a cash secured put. But I've had seven different tries with long calls, and I'm down $2,258. right now, I see selling cash cured puts as volunteering to catch a knife. It can really work out for people, but I think it's not that good from a risk reward perspective. If we continue the downtrend, if FOMC doesn't do well, if earnings are bad, I think signing up to catch the bounce is much safer. You know, this sounds very contradictory of me. It seems safer with long calls. However, I don't want to sound like I am a options genius or options guru. This is just what I'm learning, and these are some of the concepts that are going through my head. Long calls, I've had 7 different tries of buying long calls, and I've lost on every single one. My long call profit loss for the year is negative $2,258. But that's in very stark contrast to the sort of loss that I would have accrued if I just sold one cash secured put for AMD, which would be down like 4 or 5K right now. So I have half the amount of losses, and I've had 7 different tries to sort of capture this bounce. And I feel like that is very, very fair. So while I'm still figuring out just exactly how I like to buy my strikes and how I like to buy into strength, I feel like, again, just because I save so much money by not doing cash secured puts, I feel like I'm in a very good spot to continue learning. And I'm feeling like I'm very comfortable, or much more comfortable, with losing on long options, because I'm looking at like the amount loss that I would have accrued if I had opened up my usual type of play, which is, again, buy rights or cash secured puts. And before I get into the topic of the 4 habits that, you know, traders that don't do as well do, I want to talk a little bit about good decisions and bad decisions. I talk about it from time to time on the podcast, and I just wanted to remind people again, as I'm taking this like new approach to learning and I'm figuring out how to buy options and how to do all this long call, long put stuff, when I lose on a long call right now, I really feel that I'm making good decisions, that the risk reward really makes sense for me. I'm making sure that when I'm buying any sort of option right now on the long side, that it's a small enough position where I feel comfortable adding in case if it starts to win, which we'll talk about in the, you know, 4 habits of bad traders, and maybe that's a good counterexample for one of those habits. That is one thing that I want people to be aware of, is like the stock market is going to go up and down. Whether or not the stock market goes up or down does not dictate whether or not your decision was good. For example, say for example someone went all in on calls, like their entire life saving on calls, and the earnings does really well. They did an all in on earnings and the earnings did really well, and they make a lot of money. Is that a good decision? Right? Probably not. You know, if had that decision gone, you know, had that result not have been as good, that would have been a horrible decision. But because you've positively reinforced that doing that is a good thing, you're going to do it again, right? Like, how are you going to go all in on earnings, make a whole bunch of money, and decide to stop then and there? That's why, you know, on Wall Street Bets, some people win big and then they share with us later the screenshot of losing it all, right? That's very typical, very normal for Wall Street Bets. So you guys know how relatable that is. Like, how many times have we won big and we've just given it all back to the market? It happens to all of us. We can't, or we should at least try our best to not positively reinforce bad behaviors. If you lost really big because of position sizing and you open large positions to catch the bottom or to catch a bounce, to target a reversal, and that reversal happens and you are correct, it's probably still not a good decision, okay? Right? You're dancing the fine line of what is lucky, what is a good decision, what is a bad decision. Just be very, very careful with your position sizing in the next week, 2 weeks. FOMC is coming up. Earnings are coming up. You're going to get so enticed to try to make it all back. You don't need to bet the farm to make it back. I'm proof of that. I've lost so much money from Wall Street Bets, and I stream every Monday through Friday for free. You could see all my positions, and you could see how I essentially just, I don't bet the farm. I don't trade irresponsibly. At least I don't think so, right? I might be on a soapbox right now, but I'm giving people a good example to tune in and, you know, have a good community where people are trying to trade it as responsible as they can and as good-hearted as they can, and just be in an environment where losing is okay, but we're not trying to say, like, make it all back in one glorious hero play, because that is not the answer. You can have the worst habits in the world, as we'll talk about next as I read this into this next section of the podcast, but you can change it little by little. It doesn't start with, like, winning it all back and then you say, now I'll start trading responsibly, or, you know what, I'll just win this really big earnings play, then I'll start trading responsible. That doesn't happen. Similar to how, you know, people that have bad spending habits that win the lottery, they don't instantly become people that take care of their money, right? They probably won't make the money work for them. They'll probably buy a Lambo, buy a mansion. They'll do all this stuff that really doesn't, you won't pay them off for the rest of their life. Maybe they value short-term success over long-term gains, right? Same thing with just trading habits. More money or breaking even isn't going to make you a better trader. You need to start becoming a better trader today and slowly over time. There's no rush. If you truly enjoy this hobby, if it brings you a lot of joy, then, you know, you'd want to do this as long as possible so that your gains compound as you continue trading, right? We don't want to win big and then never trade again. We like trading. It's something fun that we like to do. So ideally, we grow our account, make it bigger, and we get to start making more money with the same probabilities, and it's just fun. But we need to develop the habits that get our small account into a bigger account, not by just one big lucky trade, but over a course of time. Let's talk about some of the things that bad traders do, according to Tom Hoogard, author of Best Loser Wins. So short and sweet, the very first habit that Tom Hoogard talks about is bad traders typically don't add to winners. He talks about how even some of the biggest pros on the stock market don't even do it. But what he finds is that if you don't ever add to winners, you don't get the home run wins that, you know, you need to sustain a profit loss ratio of buying long options. Of course, long options, you're bound to lose more often than you win, just probability wise. You know, a typical long call you might buy is like a 30% chance to win. There are times, though, that you win a lot. Maybe you are super correct in a direction. Most people would end up wanting to take it off the table, which is, you know, alluding to a bad habit. But not adding to winners is Tom Hoogard's first bad habit of a bad trader. I find that it's easier for me to add on to winners if the cost of the option is small. Maybe it's like a negligible amount for my account size. For example, in my main account, I have, with profits included, I'm up about like 55K, I think, for the year. I'm sitting on like a 355K portfolio because I started out with 300K this year. And I'm finding that, hey, you know, if I buy this far out the money call, if I'm correct in the direction, I only spent $37 to buy one of them. I can easily buy another one if it continues going in my direction. Like that's an amount that I don't feel bad for adding on to my winner. Adding on to a winner on the 5K account was pretty scary to do. For example, Intel, I was very correct in my guess. And I added on to winners. However, there was a swift correction in semis that ended up for me taking a loss on it. But I can't be mad at that decision. For example, had I not added the winner, I could have just maybe walked away with like $100. But I added on to the winner, and I was like a maximum profit of like $600 at that point. But then corrected, and I actually ended up losing or getting out at -350. So there's a lot of nuance to just adding on to winners because you don't want to just blindly do it. You know, if you read this book and you say, or you read this statement that says, I have to add on to winners, I'm just going to go all in. You know, I'm going to add as much money as I can to my winners as possible. You can see how that is not how you should probably be taking this piece of advice. But for me, buying options. I keep it far out the money so that the options are cheap. I just want the direction to be correct because I might have all this technical analysis that I might do. You know, I'm putting air quotes. Or I might like these indicators. I might like some reasonings about business where I think the expectations are. If I'm correct, I want to be correct fast. If I'm wrong, I would love to know if I'm wrong quickly as well. And I think being far out the money really helps me. This is a pretty big difference to my opinion about buying options before. I think when I was exploring on how to buy options, I was more into the idea of buying options closer to the money with a higher chance to win and then maybe exiting at like 30%. What is hard for me to commit to that previous plan before I read this book is that it's hard to add on to that type of winning position because if you're closer to the money, your option is more expensive because it has a higher probability to win, which is great, but it's hard to add to winners. And so I'm striking the other extreme of buying a further out the money strike and then adding on to winners that way. And we'll see, you know, if I had more money, being closer to the money probably is not a big deal, but to me it is. I noticed that my trading habits get a little bit different when, you know, I'm red on things. I'm sure that you feel the same way too. And if I keep my maximum loss small, AKA however much the long call costs, if I'm far out the money, if the long call costs $37 and, you know, say for example, I start losing on it right away, I'm not freaking out. I'm kind of sticking to my guns and maybe my max loss percentage is like, okay, once this hits like 16, 17 bucks, I'll just exit. You know, I was wrong. Exit at 50%. And hey, I didn't lose a whole lot of money and I'm learning a new strategy. And to top off this section, I just want to add that, you know, I'm not positive on long calls or long puts for this year. I'm red on both. Again, I want to give a quick assessment here. For long puts, I'm down $28, and long calls, I'm down $2,258. So again, I'm still adding on to winners. I'm noticing that I'm winning a lot at some points of the trade, and then I end up losing, maybe because I added too much, or maybe I got out too late. Maybe my profit target is just not on par. I'm doing something wrong. Or something that I could be doing better. But it does feel good, again, that my max loss on these long call, long put options, because they're so much smaller than the max loss on cash secured puts, it just feels good that I'm picking this time right now to start learning about these types of trades. But, you know, adding on to winners, very easy, again, when it's further out the money and when it's cheaper. Just to illustrate this point, I want to dive a little bit deeper into my own trading history. And all of this you can actually see for free at thetagain.com/Junie. And then just scroll down and then filter out the trades by Nike. I'll do that myself on this side here. For Nike, I've bought long puts on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different occasions. In order of when I've closed them, I'll go ahead and say the profit loss. So my first one, I lost 150. Then the next one, I lost 97. The next one, I lost 80. The next one, I lost 39. The next one, I lost 23. But the last two that I've won 540 and I've won 330. So overall, let me just do the quick math. Let me see if I can type fast enough. Minus 97, minus 80, minus 39, minus 23, plus 540, plus 330. Overall, on my long puts that I played on Nike, I'm up $481. And that's what I think is so cool about this, you know, buying into strength. You know, I'm buying more puts into strength as Nike is going down. But if I'm not correct on the put from the get-go, or, you know, if I lose momentum, my losses are so much smaller than my wins. So this is the sort of approach that I'm taking that I hope to expand to the long call side. The long call side, I'm not very lucky on just because the market is in a downtrend. So, of course, those are going to be harder to win. And that's something I'm observing right now, something that I'm soaking in like a sponge. But this was a very, very cool outline of just that point that is made about when you win, you want your wins to be big. And when you lose, you want your losses to be small. It's very hard to do that with cash secured puts. So there's a time and place for cash secured puts, but there's also a time and place that I'm learning for long puts and long calls. Okay, this episode's getting a little long, so I kind of speed it up a little bit. The second point that they that Tom Hoogard mentions is bad traders don't use stop losses. I, for one, actually don't know how to put on a stop loss. I tell myself every stream that I'm going to learn how to do it. I just have a mental stop loss, really. When I open a trade on stream, what I'll typically do is I'll do some analysis. I'll open the trade. I'll find the strikes that I like. I'll open it and I'll log it. When I log the trade, that's when I typically choose my stop loss. You know, I'll say like, I'm willing to hold on to this until it's like a minus 50% loss, you know. Otherwise, if it starts winning, I'll just add more. And that's, of course, doable again because the options that I buy are cheap enough where I feel comfortable with adding on to winners. But if you never, say, for example, set that stop loss, you're going to end up just losing more money overall because what you're going to start doing is you're going to hold on to them and you're going to start developing copium. And I think what is worse than copium is hopium when you start hoping that it bounces back. You picked a very directional play. Or for example, I picked a very directional play on Nike. Remember, I lost on the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I lost on the first 5 times I bought puts on Nike. Okay, had I not done a stop loss, I would have lost at least $300 more, but I didn't because I had a mental stop loss of about 50%. It goes down 50%. Hey, you know what? I was wrong. I'll move on. I'll log it as a loss. I'm trying to be the best loser. A lot of people don't have the stop loss and they develop hopium. This hopium and copium can lead you into doing the third bad habit. This is an awesome segue, by the way. And this is, of course, in the book, so I'm sure that he wrote this in this way on purpose. But this hopium copium can lead to the third bad trading habit, and that's adding on to losing trades. I have never done that since I've read this book, and I could find that if I had done that, I would be in a much worse spot. If your trade doesn't work out, you got to be okay with just admitting it. Just be like, yeah, I was wrong. My bad. I'm going to be a better loser. I'm going to learn from this and move on. What you don't want to do is stay in a losing position and then say, you know what? The entire rest of the market is wrong. I'm correct. I'm going to add on to this and hope for the best. That is, I think, a recipe for disaster. So that's number 3. Number 4, and just because I want to make this a reasonably lengthy episode, they take half profits. Bad traders take half profits. How many times have you won on something and you took half of it off and you let the rest ride? Okay. I know I am a culprit of that. I've done that many times before I read this book, before I was in Theta Gang. I did this all the time. When you take half profits, you're limiting yourself to the home run plays. The home run plays where you add to winners and it works out and it keeps working out. Those are the plays that enable you to win many or to lose many times before your next big win. And hopefully over the course of a period of time, you develop some sort of sense, some sort of system where you're able to find more of these home runs, and that's how you really take off. But in the meantime, if you consistently take half profits of your best trades, you're really limiting yourself to lasting long enough in the market to sustain the strategy. Luckily for me, I'm doing this strategy as kind of like a side project. Like, I'm not expecting to make a lot of money from this sort of trading style. I just really find it interesting. I find it really fun. So I'm always going to be able to just like comfortably add to winners and take losers off the table. I don't see myself really taking half profits. I think if any of these plays really start to work out, just because I've already proven myself with Nike that I'm able to add on to winners comfortably. On the long call side, I still want that to work out, but I'll know for sure that, you know, once I start thinking about, oh, I'll take half off, it's not a very good habit. Again, you need to, in this low probability of trading, okay, this is me talking more about the long side. When you buy a long call or a long put, your typical profit percentage is like 30%, maybe lower, maybe a little bit higher, but it's around 30%. you need your wins to be bigger than your losses. So again, the home runs really help you buffer the times when you are really wrong. Everyone has streaks of wins and everyone has streaks of losses. It's when you have streaks of wins, are you winning enough to sort of buffer the streaks of losses? Of course, that could be applied to every single trading style, but in reality, when you want to start putting a system behind things, you just gotta be aware of when maybe you're limiting yourself too much. I wanna leave off just talking about the Intel call example that I mentioned earlier in the podcast of when I had Intel calls that were up about like 400, 500 bucks at one point, and that I ended up losing $350 on the trade. Some of you might be like, Junie, how could you possibly believe Tom about, you know, taking half profits is bad? That did not work out for you, Junie. You literally could have made 200 bucks instead of losing 350. That's a big difference. How could you possibly think taking half profits is bad? I, right now, for this, in this period of time, I do believe that in order to make long options profitable in the long run, you need to have a home run play. I thought that Intel, those Intel calls at the entry that I got in and the amount that I was buying into the winners, I thought that that had a pretty good chance of actually being a home run play, right? And so this is, that was a calculated decision of, you know, I have a maximum loss of 350. I'm willing to lose the 350. I can't be scared of making a home run play after knowing that I know I have a good, comfortable max loss. It's not like I'm going to lose more than I expect, right? I have a max loss that I have in mind that I'm going to get out at, but I'm going to go for this play. The play, the result was bad, right? Like, I ended up losing 350 bucks, but I believe that the decision was good. I feel like I had my risk management in place. You know, I'm expecting to lose 350 or a home run. I am expecting both scenarios, and one of those scenarios happened. I felt safe. I felt covered the entire time. I felt good. Because the result was bad doesn't mean the decision was bad. And so that Intel play helped positively reinforce my good habits of going for that home run, which led me to buy these Nike puts. The first five lost. I cut the losers off where I felt comfortable of losing, minus 50%. Great. Lost, 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 lost. And then when I finally found a good opening, I went in, bought some more Nike puts, and then that was my home run play. I started adding on to more. It started going down even more, added more, and then got out with $880. There were many times where I could have just taken half profits in the winning Nike puts, but I didn't. I let it run. I let it get to a nice area where I thought maybe it can reverse, and I got out. I got out with an $880 gain, and then thus netting me like a, let me see, how much is that of difference again? I still have it saved. $481 net profit on these puts. If I took half of the profits, I would be still red. Yeah, if I took 880, 440. Yeah, I would be down $41 on Nike, but instead I'm up 400. And I hope to scale this solution over time over many different tickers and different stocks. But I have a good example of just about every single one of these bad habits that I'm applying my trading to. So if it can work for me, I think it could work for you. Of course, I do say that this book teaches you how to, I think, win more. I think if you are red for the year, I think there are other things that you need to focus on that don't involve this book, because I think you would take some of the things in this book in a different light, which would not be beneficial. I think right now, if you are red for the year, you need to focus on, well, here's a few things. If you've been red this entire year, you need to really just focus on, I think, stock investing and just buy SPY. Like, you have to do the most boring thing possible and get your dopamine receptors reset, because you're doing some really crazy trading if you're not green this year. If you've been red this entire year. if you were green and now you are red, I think there's some chink in your armor that you need to focus on either position sizing or the direction of your bets. One of those is critically off, and that's something worth visiting. If you're green and you're hoping to maintain the green or get greener, I think that's where this book really comes in handy. At least that's, again, coming from my experience. And instead of just like blatantly talking and giving advice and stuff, I want to talk a little bit about my totals, because that's important, right? Like, why listen to someone that doesn't make money in the stock market? Because that's my entire ethos of ThetaGain.com. For my year to date for my 5K account is now at 25.29%. My 5K account is now at $7,499.78. I am up, let me see, 50.6K on a 300K account. I am 16.87% up on my main account, which is a 300K account. Let me just compare to SPY stock. SPY is up 15.19%, and QQQ is up 15%. So I'm, again, still beating QQQ and SPY, still grateful. And here's the thing. I am buying long calls and long puts, and I'm net losing on them, and I'm still beating QQQ and SPY. I think my risk management is just so, like, that's what I'm most proud of. I'm not proud of my gains. I'm not proud of winning plays. That's not the stuff that I'm, like, proud of, you know? Like, I feel like I'm being a very good example for introducing new strategies in a safe manner, you know, practicing position sizing. That's the stuff that I just really, really start, like I love leaning into that, right? Stock market shouldn't just be about gains. I think that puts a lot of pressure on people. People want to make as much money as possible. People want to look cool. People want to do this. People want to do that. At the end of the day, man, it's about just the fundamentals. And learning stuff new in maybe like a safe environment, you know, again, but that also leads to position sizing. My position sizing for my newer style of trading is on point, right? Like, I'm learning a lot of new and cool stuff, which you can do too. And that's why I'm talking about this point. You could be learning new strategies right now too, but you don't need to have this new strategy that you're learning the key to making it all back. Learning a new strategy, you should still keep your position sizing in check. Just because you just started learning about selling puts doesn't mean you sell puts on everything. And just because you learned how to buy calls doesn't mean you need to buy calls on everything. Position sizing will always trump, I think, everything. And to leave off, I think excitement, sadness, depression, grief, regret, all of these emotions, positive and negative, these are the emotions that make us human. Like, you should be pretty proud that we could feel these feelings. If you can't, you know, we got some sociopathic stuff going on. But because we feel these feelings, and because everyone else feels these feelings, these are the feelings that make the stock market irrational. People feel scared. People want to sell stuff. People are excited. People want to buy stuff. It's just human psychology. The thing that you can keep in control, for the most part, is your fundamentals, like your position sizing. This alone, it's one of the most fundamental and core things you can ever learn when trading stocks. Is one of the hardest things to always grasp when the market is running really hot. It's also equally hard to grasp when you're desperate and trying to make it back. Be careful out there. The stock market is very irrational because, again, we are human. We feel these emotions and we put these emotions to the market. It's going to be hard to navigate. But, you know, we check in with each other, we tune into the stream, we keep listening to the podcast, we join other communities, we listen to other podcasts, we go to other streams. None of it has to be mine. But you got to do these things to keep some of these things in check. If you're just there alone, staring at your computer screen or your phone, and you see a red number, and you got no one else to kind of kick it with or talk to about stocks and stuff, you might end up doing some really, really bad stuff. just be careful. You know, I've been there, and not to wish this upon anybody, but everyone gets got at least once. So I also want to remind people that's normal. If you have lost a large amount of money, it's happened to virtually everyone in the stock market, because no one joins the stock market, makes money from the stock market, and doesn't think that putting more money in doesn't mean more money, right? You might be so new that you don't know anything to keep your account safe or anything, but it happens to the best of us. And it's just over a course of time that you learn from these lessons, you apply these lessons, you might learn new lessons from other people, but you positively reinforce the good habits, you stop doing the bad habits, and you start taking control of your own trading with your own system, learning from other people, maybe learning from your own experiences. It's a journey. It's a long one. It's not supposed to be a short one-win thing, because, you know, just winning one time isn't going to really, you know, scale into the rest of your life. We want to be able to do this for a long time so we can learn the most that we can and we have the greatest chance of success. Thank you for listening. I felt like today's episode, I wanted to spend just a little bit more time in it, just because, man, I am learning a lot, and it's nice distracting myself just a little bit, as, you know, a lot of my cash secure puts are red. I'm weathering the storm. I hope you are too, and I hope to see everyone next week. Bye-bye. From what just started out as just an idea, then learning how to trade options, then building a logging platform, then partnering with TasyTrade is so surreal to me. If you'd like to trade on TasyTrade, you can see the show description from my referral link, or use ThetaGain referral code, one word, all caps, when signing up to help me and support the website, podcast, and stream. This podcast, the website, and stream are all made possible because of my patrons at patreon.com/ThetaGain. Signing up helps keep the services up and alive, as well as pay my own personal bills. I do the podcast, website, and stream full-time as my primary source of income. I feel grateful to be able to do this full-time and focus on providing the best service possible for free. The podcast, website, and stream are all free, and it'll stay that way. Signing up for Patreon gives you a few perks, though, so check it out again at patreon.com/ThetaGain if you're interested in helping support. I want to give a huge shout out in the order of in which they joined the ThetaGain.com platform. These are the patrons that allow me to stream during the day. You know, I don't have to find a 9-to-5 job because my expenses are really low, and, you know, I make just enough to get by from these people. So just thank you again so much for continuing to be a patron, and it means a lot. And I kind of talk about a little bit of the website changes after this, so if you want to stick around. But huge shout out to Banadushi, Kaput, Grandpa95, Slow Motion, Maltman8256, Chicken Dinner, Lord Skeletor, NSS88, The Jester, AJR Tar Heel, Young Rich, Rustier, Pig Trader, Fancy Wolf, Major, EDC, Avrillian, Statistically Random, Bachata Thug, Mr. Integrity, Steve Katzy, Asho Kabat, McFly, Y-Teen, Mods, KJ Martin, Arf Man, Can't Make Money RL, Teko Mi Elmo, Maestro XC, Nala, Gruffalo, Clutch, Upstream Puddle, Mememe, Espresso Bean, Rooster, Jayford LOL, Sumatrix, Bearded Savage, Andy V, Kevlar 22, Dang High, Los Pepes, Danu 9000, J Perkins 86, Turbo Ricky, Louis BG, Desserts, Vegeta Plank, Alexander Kerm, Husk P, Travella, RS Schmitty, LPL, Tyler LM 97, Troop 947, Lloydo, Theta Collector, T Wall 3252, Danger 10, Joe Quirt, Spicy Lemons, Bustin' Justin, Big Dillo, SWH, JH Spammy Spam, MX7, Jimmy Gill, and Suede Slides. Okay, yeah. Just thank you again to the patrons that help support me. These last few weeks have been really scary, right? Like, I think a lot of people have lost a good bit of money. I've seen some crazy, crazy losses on Wall Street Bets. And we haven't quite seen these because the market has been more or less predictable in the first half of this year because of the AI rally. But now that we're seeing some of the market turn back, we're starting to see some losses pop up, at least more than before. And I don't know. I feel like because I've been working just so, just so deep into the website and everything, that I feel like these last few weeks have actually just been very fulfilling for me. I feel like it's more important than ever to answer the question of how am I doing on the ThetaGain.com platform. We log our trades. I trade every single one or log every single one. And I find it even a little cumbersome, right, to figure out how I'm doing on, you know, long puts, right? Like in general, I love to know if long puts with Nike and with all these other companies, am I positive? You know, that's easily can be seen maybe on the profile page. But I want to see like maybe a graph of like, okay, long puts worked for me in April. And it looks to me that I just stopped doing these. I wonder if I should just start doing these again. Or maybe long puts are working, but they stopped working because maybe the market's trending back up. And maybe me seeing this line go down is a good indicator. Maybe I don't open another long put for right now. Stuff like that. I want to be able to give this sort of feedback to the user. I want that feedback from me. So, you know, whatever you see on this new dashboard change, these are the things that I think are most important. I'm doing some studying right now of what other logging platforms sort of show you. I think they show you a lot of fluff. There are a lot of things that other platforms show that I don't think is really important at the end of the day. So I'm trying to have the dashboard be very concise, very simple, and focus on what I think works best for me. And of course, I'm always open to suggestions at juni@thetagain.com. I could imagine someone new hearing me say something like that, and they're like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to trade just like you. Dude, you should see what ThetaGain.com looked like before and after. I'd say a lot or most of the changes to ThetaGain.com is from feedback from email or the patrons in the Discord. There's just a lot of feedback that goes into making a website like this, and the website has grown a lot since its birth almost five years ago. That is nuts. So continuing to work on the website, I'm done with all the charts. If you guys are interested in knowing where my progress is, all the charts are done. I'm just working on whether or not it makes sense to combine some of them and making it just look and feel better. For example, some of the changes include like, oh, you don't necessarily want to hover your mouse over the line on the line graph. You want to maybe hover your mouse in the area of the line and it'll highlight the line for you. Just some of these like easier to use options, because the last thing I want is to put all this work into something that doesn't feel good. Feeling good is probably the number one thing that I want to emphasize when using a platform like this, because again, I'm already asking you a lot to log your trade, right? That's already a really hard habit to develop. I would love to reward you with positive reinforcement of like, hey, this graph is fun and it feels good to interact with. So really try to make sure that that feels good, so that you continue wanting to log and you're excited to log and you're like, I can't wait to figure out more about my trades. And I don't know. That's what I imagine in my head, at least. Okay. I know I'm a bit of a optimistic person. Personal life wise, I feel also very good. I don't have anything to complain about, but I also don't have anything to like really celebrate. At least not yet. I have a really big celebration for one of my best friends, but I'm afraid to even talk about it on the podcast because I don't want to leak it. But yeah, one of my friends is going through something really, really happy and really, really good that I get to be there for. But I'll talk about that after it happens. it's not like they listen to the podcast anyway, but you know, just making sure. So that's gonna be really fun. Oh, some of you know that I keep shrimp. You know, I raise shrimp. Dude, my shrimp had babies. I have hella red crystal shrimp in my tank now. There's probably like 30 babies. And they're considered pure red line. I don't know if you guys are that, or I said pure red, or pure red line. That's red line is a skin in Counter-Strike. They're pure red crystal shrimp. So they're like purebred, you know, whatever. I just can't help but think like each one of those is like $20. So I'm really proud of being able to raise them. It just shows like, hey, I'm a pretty good shrimp keeper. So if, you know, the stock stuff doesn't work out, maybe I could like scale that into a hobby. Let's see. What else? Getting into pickleball, getting into racket sports. I think those are pretty fun. My interest for golf has also peaked again. I'm going to the driving range today with my fiance. It's going to be our mid-Friday activity. And then we might go grocery shopping and whatnot. Might get a boba, you know, on the way home so I can feel energized and ready to work on the website for maybe, I don't know, like a 3 or 4 hour just power session. Today, very calm. I woke up, felt great, had a great stream. I feel like today's podcast episode is just nail on the head. I feel like I said everything I wanted to say. And this is, this, I just feel, despite having lost about, I think from the peak, about like 14K in profits, I'm sitting at 50K in profits. Despite losing 14K, dude, I feel like I'm positively reinforcing a lot of good habits to help me for when the market rebounds. I don't know when it will rebound. Maybe it is next week. Maybe it's not. But I feel like I'm doing all my homework and writing good notes for myself. And yeah, I can't ask for more. I feel like my life is really just in a good spot. I feel grateful. I feel lucky. And a lot of that is just with who I choose to surround myself during the day. Like I wake up next to my fiance, feel great, and then go head to the stream, and then I'm surrounded by people that want to be there, that want to listen to me, that want to interact with me. Then I go into a code base that I wrote that I feel like when I write code for it, it's, you know, improving my chances of success. It's all about me. Like, it's fulfilling to me. And then I go off to jiu-jitsu, get a good sweat in. I meet people that, you know, that I think like me, and I love them. Always have a great laugh, always a great sweat, great workout. Just really fun to do. Then I come home, I eat a pretty good dinner. Sometimes it's just a sandwich that I make with sprouts. I think sprouts are the, like, literally the hack to make any sandwich really good, and they're super cheap. And then, like, I like have a small bag of chips, of my favorite chips that I might have, like hot Cheetos or regular cheesy Cheetos. Those are slept on, by the way. I feel like a lot of people love hot Cheetos, but they don't talk about normal Cheetos enough. And speaking of great food, dude, past your bedtime, longtime friend, longtime patron, not a patron right now, but, you know, tends to come back every now and then, sent me an email. He's traveling right now. And there was a burrito at the Costco of the country that he was visiting. It was crazy. But that was a welcome and cool email that I got from Pastor Bedtime. And I thought I just might share that in case if you are listening, Mr. Bedtime, we all miss you. And I hope you are doing well. And traveling does sound fun right now. I think that is all. In terms of how many more episodes of this are left about this damn book, because I know maybe some of you aren't into this sort of stuff, I think I might have just one more episode, you know, two max, but one more episode for sure. The next one will be on this book. If you enjoyed today's episode, you're going to, again, enjoy the next one for sure. But yeah, and I think that is all. I'm going to close the book for a sound effect. So I just want to give you a heads up. So I just want to say thank you for listening this far. And yeah, just grateful to be in a position where people care about what I have to say. And that I hope you have a great rest of your week. Thank you, and bye-bye.